Everybody in the chat is booty clapping to the intro.
Let's go.
What is that? I can't even do that. What is that?
You can't do that. Our moves here, you know?
Anyway, yeah, we do have the best intro in the business.
Best intro ever.
Best intro in the business. I never get sick of it. So
no, never.
Never.
Every time I hear it, it just hypes me up. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to.
Even when I'm not in the mood to do the show, which is rarely, I'm like, the intro gets me, like, especially being, Chris is good at that. I can't.
It's in the genes, you know?
Oh, God. I'm just Italian and Slavic. There's no, well, maybe I can do the tarantula. Anyway, so how have you been? It's been a few days. Not much has happened, but I think things are getting a little bit darker. So it's kind of be a little bit of a black pill episode, I think.
Oh, God. You know, no, things are good here. I just got back from Kazan, beautiful city, beautiful area. Tatarstan is amazing and sort of shows the unity of Russia, the beauty of the religious mosaic that is the Russian Federation. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah, and
very happy for all the good work we're doing. And I am headed on another trip this week. So Wednesday, I will be with you all from somewhere else.
Ooh, another mystery.
Another mystery.
Oh, I love it. This is my favorite. We're like, never know. We're like that mystery airhead. That's not good. It's never good. But our trips are usually good.
That's true.
Yeah, I do. So that's great. It's funny that you're visiting Tatarstan and at the same time starting fights on Twitter about Crimea.
Because I just attended. So that was new. I attended the Yalta International Forum.
Oh, is that why you've been? Yalta is Russia forever.
Absolutely. Well, I was with, you know, I had the dinner with the Deputy Prime Minister of Crimea, and it was amazing. And all the diplomats and international thinkers and public intellectuals. It was fantastic, as always. And of course, we know Crimea is historically Russia and will forever be part of the Russian Federation at this point. It's not going back. No ifs, ends, or buts about that.
Yeah, so guys, people have decided.
Make
sure you follow Chris on Twitter. He's arguing all day long. It's so much fun with idiots.
I love it. You know, people like lock their accounts. I'm like, bring it on, NAFO. Come on.
I want the smoke. Speaking of smoke, well, all smoke and mirrors, I guess, but. So we talked a little bit about the Russia on my mind. Speaking of the Republican Jewish Coalition Congress thing, we're going to go a little bit into that today. We didn't really do a lot of it on the show, but I think that it got overlooked. We had a lot of things going on at the same time, and Trump's speech I thought was really telling. So we'll get into that a little bit today. We have a lot of the Heritage Foundation drama. We're going to get into that, but not because I like gossip. I do love gossip. I'm a girl. I don't like to do gossip on the stream. It's not about the gossip. It's about, I think that this is kind of a barometer, or it's indicative of stuff that's happening on a whole. So we'll get into that. We have the government shutdown update and everything that's going on with that. And your Pete Hegseth is chiming in, and our friendly neighborhood terrorist is in town. We will be talking about Jolani's visit and
things
going on in Syria. So let's get started. Trump's speech to the Republican Jewish Coalition. So you guys know that happened last weekend. Mm-hmm. I broke it down into parts so we could go through it. I do want you guys to listen to what he says.
Hello to everyone at the Republican Jewish Coalition, and congratulations on 40 amazing years. I want to thank your national chairman, former Senator Norm Coleman, along with your CEO, Matt Brooks, and my friend Miriam Adelson, and so many other incredible supporters, distinguished guests out in beautiful Las Vegas. 4 days from now, we will celebrate the one-year anniversary of the most important election victory in the history of our country. With the help of many of you, we won all 7 swing states by millions of votes. We won the Electoral College 312 to 226. We won the popular vote for the first time of any Republican in decades, and we won 86% of the counties in America, 2,700 to 525. And very importantly, the RJC helped ensure that we won the highest percentage of Jewish vote of any Republican since 1988. I can't imagine we didn't do better than that after all I've done for the Jewish vote. I must be honest with you, but that's okay. 1988's not that bad.
What'd you do for the Jewish vote, Trump?
Yikes. Let's, yeah. Okay.
What'd you do? I want to know.
You know, it's not even what you do for the Jewish vote. It's what did you do for your friend?
Miriam Adelson. He shouts her out every chance he gets. It's really bizarre, all the attention he draws to her.
Well, listen, after you give $250 million, I mean, you better be shouting out.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's continue.
1 year ago, we were a dead country. Now we're the hottest country anywhere in the world by far. Wages for workers have risen at the fastest rate in 60 years, and more than $18 trillion are pouring into the United States from all over the world. We have fully secured our southern border, and we have ended 8 wars in 9 months. That's pretty good. 8 wars in 9 months. We have one to go, as you know, Russia, Ukraine. That includes the historic peace deal that ended the war in Gaza. After 2 harrowing years of darkness, our 20 courageous hostages were returned to the loving embrace of their families. And you have to remember, we also got many of the other hostages out long before that. Many, many hostages were gotten out by us. Israel has never had a better friend than President Donald J. Trump. In my first term, I terminated the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. With Operation Midnight Hammer last June, we totally obliterated Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity. And we didn't even get them by surprise. They expected it, and they got obliterated. After years of broken promises by many other American presidents, I kept my promise, officially recognized the capital of Israel, and moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. I also recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Who would have done that? Nobody even thought I was going to think about it. Nobody else thought about it for 70 years, but I did it.
But he said the last time when he was in Israel, he said, Miriam's the one who told me about the Golan Heights.
But, you know, everybody always talked about the Golan Heights. It just was a violation of international law and all international norms and standards, plus the United Nations General Assembly and Security Council resolutions. So nobody was going to do it.
Why doesn't MAGA ever actually hold him to, you know, like he ran on the no new wars thing and he is totally mask off with the fact that it's like, I ripped up the JCPOA for Israel and during my first term so we could bomb the shit out of Iran during my second.
Obviously, well, that's the thing. You have a division now in MAGA, as we are all witnessing. I think the MAGA that were more ideological and not fanboys are wait a minute, you've broken a lot of promises here. And I think that's emblematic of the Tucker Carlson wing, the Massey wing, the Marjorie Taylor Greene wing, that's Matt Gaetz. If you look at that side has been hypercritical of a lot of that stuff. But the Trump fans who are just Trump loyalists and Trump above all, they're not going to be critical because their guy is getting stuff done and making the headlines and is, you know, being paraded around and everyone's kowtowing to him. So why rock the boat in that sense? You got what you wanted. Right.
Yeah. That's why
you have a in terms of information, the information space and sort of how he's caricatured by that side of the MAGA right as sort of a new emperor. They would be okay if he declared the American Empire, Imperium Americana or some bullshit like that. And he's put on a crown and a robe and they'd be like, he's the new Caesar. They would love it.
They would.
The other side is wait a minute, we're protecting our constitutional and civil liberties, we're protecting the republic, and you're not doing America's best interests here, you're serving Israel. That's when you have the Make Israel Great Again crowd, obviously they're it's Israel first, not America first. And also the people who are Rand Paul, who's always shouting in the wilderness, you need congressional authorization to do these wars. You cannot just attack sovereign nations without congressional approval. It is constitutionally bound. But you see that there's no restrictions here in the majority of that crowd. And you see this bifurcation and really actually a splintering of the MAGA movement on some of these major issues.
Yeah, we're going to get even more into that. Also, it's like this gaslighting thing where it's like, I'm the no new wars president. I'm the peace guy. And then I'm literally telling you that I have created all of the material conditions required to create an apocalyptic war in the Middle East.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Recognition of the Golan Heights, moving of the embassy, helping them annex the Golan Heights, Operation Midnight Hammer, ripping up the JCPOA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things were conducive to starting this much larger war than even the one that's happening now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And actually, it has destabilized the whole region. And is going to lead to right now there are articles coming out saying that Israel is going to go back into war against Hezbollah. And mm-hmm. It's already happening. I mean, they're already bombing them. There's already drones every day and aircraft over there. The other thing to think about is that Syria is on the verge of sectarian violence once again. The Shia have been declared personas non grata in Damascus, and everybody's going nuts over there. And I still think we have elections coming up in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Situation is not stable in the region overall. It really isn't. And I think that people have to, we had Turkey, of course, do their normal thing. We're going to arrest Netanyahu and, you know, could still sell him oil and everything else that he wants, right. No problem, and do business with Israel. But I think that in terms of long-term stability, the region is much more unstable now.
I agree. All right, Trump, let's take us home.
I withdrew the United States from the anti-American, anti-Israel UN Human Rights Council and terminated funding for the extremely corrupt United Nations Relief and Works Agency, a totally corrupt operation. We're also defending our Jewish citizens here in America. Just as I promised, we're deporting the foreign jihadist sympathizers and Hamas supporters from our country, and it's happening very quickly. Upon taking office, I signed a historic executive order directing every department and agency in the federal government to do everything in their power to end the scourge of anti-Semitism in America. My administration has filed historic civil rights lawsuits and cut off funding to colleges and universities that refuse to defend their Jewish students from vile acts of anti-Semitism. And we have secured some of the largest discrimination settlements in modern times. There's been nothing like it. In just 9 months, we have done more to protect Jewish Americans than any administration in history by far. And we're just getting started. We are going to continue to help. Together, we will make America stronger, safer, richer, prouder, and greater than ever before. I want to thank you once again to everyone at the Republican Jewish Coalition. God bless America. I'm with you all the way.
I feel dumber listening to him every time.
I'm angry at MAGA. I'm angry.
But just think of it this way. Like, when you listen to foreign leaders like President Putin or President Xi, it's like very like high level language, history, philosophy, political theory. It's a speech that could be an article in an academic journal. This is just like the I'm on social media or I'm on a talk show.
You're the hottest country.
Of course, it feels.
Last year we were dead. It's crazy.
It's the complete. You know, all these people are like, "Make America great again." Okay, let's make America great again. The founding fathers and the framers knew Greek and Latin, so I'm going to quiz everyone on Greek since I speak Greek fluently and I'm a Greek citizen. So, all right, we're going to do Greek. We're going to do Latin. Everyone's going to read the classics. We're going to read all of the greats like Plutarch and we're going to go at it. All right. We're going to go at it. We're going to be the great America that once was.
Can you imagine like Putin bragging about suing Migmo for being mean to students? That's what he's talking about. He's talking about, we said we got the largest settlement for Jewish faculty and students. That's because they said they felt unsafe. You want to know how much the settlements were? $6 million were a couple of them. Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting. Interesting. I don't know. Just, you know, put on the cap again. But, you know, one thing I was listening to that and I was thinking to myself, wasn't it the first administration, the first time he was in office when there were some slogans in Charlottesville and things like that? I remember very vividly.
Jews will not replace us?
That was the slogan. I think that was the slogan.
Maybe they were Mexicans and they were saying, Jew will not replace us. Like, you will not. Jew will not replace us.
But you see what I, like, are any of those guys in trouble? Like, are any of them?
No, I hang out with them on Spaces. What the hell are you talking about?
It's wild. I don't know. Our politics are insane.
It's gonna get better. This episode is chock full of it, because not a lot of political movement, but a lot of social movement in the last couple of days. This Heritage Foundation thing is wild to me. So this all starts back with yes, Chris did do a major in philosophy, I think, at one point.
It was an undergrad major in philosophy, and I have a master's in philosophy. Yeah. So yes, philosophy.
This Heritage Foundation thing, this stems from an appearance of Nick Fuentes on Tucker Carlson. I held a space on this. I'm not going to put any clips up from Tucker and Nick's interview. The full thing is on Twitter if you want to watch it. It was not very provocative. I mean, I even tried to make a space out of it and kind of struggled a bit because it was very plain Jane and up to par. I mean, it was good. So what the fallout from that is that people started to choose sides, because the Zionists and the Israel Firsters came out and they want Tucker canceled. I think we talked about this last week. Levin went on the Republican Jewish Coalition stage and said, what do you mean we don't cancel people? We cancel people all the time. Well, they want Tucker canceled. So then this new movement came out with the hashtag that said, I stand with Tucker Carlson, or I stand with Tucker. So we're all caught up. Kevin Roberts of the Heritage Foundation issues this statement on Thursday, October 30th.
I'll have more to say on this in the coming days, but today I want to be clear about one thing. Christians can critique the state of Israel without being anti-Semitic. And of course, anti-Semitism should be condemned. The Heritage Foundation didn't become the intellectual backbone of the conservative movement by canceling our own people or policing the consciences of Christians. And we won't start doing that now. We don't take direction from comments on X, though we are grateful for the robust free speech debate. We also don't take direction from members or donors, though we are inherently grateful for their support. We will always defend truth. We will always defend America. And we will always defend our friends against the slander of bad actors who serve someone else's agenda. That includes Tucker Carlson, who remains, and as I have said before, always will be a close friend of the Heritage Foundation. The venomous coalition attacking him are sowing division. Their attempt to cancel him will fail. I disagree with, and even abhor, things that Nick Fuentes says. But canceling him is not the answer either. When we disagree with a person's thoughts and opinions, we challenge those ideas in debate. And we have seen success in this approach as we continue to dismantle the vile ideas of the left. As my friend Vice President Vance said last night, what I am not okay with is any country coming before the interests of American citizens, and it is important for all of us, assuming we are American citizens, to put the interest of our own country first. That's where our allegiance lies, and that's where it will stay.
Now, it was a little bit longer, but the most important part of that is when he says venomous coalition, and obviously he stands up for Tucker and Nick in, you know, the easy way, the milquetoast way. So, I mean, it's easy to just say, I support free speech. I refuse to. That's like very...
And what... Okay. If I were to say horrible coalition, ugly coalition, venomous, I just don't understand what's wrong with venomous.
That's what they picked up on. And they said, that's an anti-Semitic trope. And I was like, I don't, why? And like the fact that it needed to be explained to me was, and I feel like I'm pretty well-versed, especially in racism. So I was like, what is this? This doesn't conjure up a vision of Jews or anything anti-Semitic in my brain. I just thought of a pit of vipers.
Yeah.
I guess the pit of vipers is the anti-Semitic thing. I don't know. Anyway, so of course.
Isn't that like a biblical reference too? Like,
I'm not even sure. But anyway, after this, now, can you tell our viewers a little bit about the Heritage Foundation?
So the Heritage Foundation is a classic conservative think tank. It's mostly aligned with sort of Reagan era sort of policies and has sort of that flavor to it. It's not totally neocon, although it has had like sort of a streak, but it is very much about American patriotism, anti-communism, pro-capitalism and pro-markets. It's very much upholding of sort of the classic Republican values. And here, I mean, the Republican Party's values.
Right.
And it has been at the forefront, actually, historically, of sort of Red Scare tactics and things like that. Even though they talk about robust speech in the Cold War, they were not so interested in robust speech. I'll tell you that much. But they have deep pockets. They have a broad network of donors. And they have been very close to political power, especially in the Republican Party since its inception, pretty much. And they've been able to guide a lot of policies. And I think back to a lot of very important people, even in the Bush administration, Reagan, of course, thinking about other prominent Republicans who've been involved. Mostly it's been sort of the premier think tank for that side of the aisle. For many decades.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody's saying it's in scripture. And I know that. I know that they're it's obviously a scriptural reference. But at the same time, that makes me take even more issue with it, because you're saying, like, the Jesus's words are reasons to be canceled over? John's, the Baptist's words are reason to be canceled? You're losing, but we're going to even get more into that. That comes into play. So after this, the what is known to be kind of a tight ship, the Heritage Foundation starts leaking like a sieve. The emails poured out, the videos poured out, private meetings poured out, private conversations. The first one that comes out is this NFTCA, the National or NTFCA, sorry, National Task Force for Combating Anti-Semitism. They send a letter, blah, 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 condemning Kevin Roberts. They want to have a meeting, talks about Tucker, Nick, yada, yada, yada. They have a meeting. He apologized to them at the meeting, and he's handling the issue. This goes on. So the task force continues. They say, we're going to comb through everything and we're going to make a list of recommendations. Among those recommendations were removing the video that caused the firestorm, which, why does that matter? The video's everywhere. Okay, remove the video that caused the firestorm. This is verbatim. There are 100 million Christians in the U.S. that found Tucker's comments deeply offensive when he called the Christian Zionists a heresy and a mind virus.
Okay. I don't know. Are all those 100 million Christians evangelical, crazy, radical Christian Zionists? Because I don't think so. I think there are Catholics in there, and I think there are Orthodox Christians in there, both of which condemn Christian Zionism.
Correct. Two, apologize to Christians and Jews who are steadfast members of the conservative movement and believe that Israel has a special role to play, both biblically and politically.
Sorry, as a conservative Christian person who went to seminary, I can tell you that the church is the new Israel. Israel politically is gone. In terms of Zionism, it's a no-brainer. And it just doesn't make any sense. What are these people saying?
Wait, that gets so much more insane. This is next. Condemnation of any content that Tucker Carlson has hosted. Not hosts in the future, as hosted. They want him to condemn the whole library or statements he has made without calling for his cancellation or end to your friendship, but an acknowledgement that you and Tucker have disagreements and you disagree with and condemn his anti-Semitic content. We will consider the matter closed. Who the hell are you to consider anything closed? You pointed out repeatedly that we face a challenge in reaching disenfranchised young men who are caught in the spells of Nick Fuentes and others. To address this issue specifically, we recommend hiring a visiting fellow, one who shares mainstream conservative views on Israel, Jews, and Christian Zionists, who would help identify strategies and tools with Gen Z and beyond. Again, we're back to this. They're terrified of losing, especially the young male vote. They already lost it, which was shown in that blue wave over this past week. And lastly, the most important one, the task force members would also like to host Shabbat dinners with the interns and junior staff of Heritage in partnership with the with Heritage to host conversations on Judaism and the Judeo-Christian tradition. Okay, why do we need Shabbat dinners to have Jews teach us about the Judeo-Christian tradition? Okay, but either way, it comes off as an invitation. No pressure. Except the last lines after the recommendations. If we are not able to come to an agreement soon, the relationship between the Heritage Foundation and the task force will be irrevocably harmed. Now, keep in mind that people that are on this task force board, specifically Victoria Coates, is in the Trump administration.
Yep.
So doesn't that read like a threat?
Yes.
So this email goes out to everybody, all of the underling with the recommendations. They tell them the recommendations about the dinners and all of that stuff. And like, you know, we're going to probably implement these things. Stop anti-Semitism, calls for Kevin Roberts firing. Everything is crazy. So
can I ask, why are we never, why can we never invite these Jewish members to church?
We're going to get there and you're going to have your time to shine. So of course, Kevin, being the cock that he is, apologizes.
Term venomous coalition. A terrible choice of words, especially for our Jewish colleagues and friends who understand that given history to be a trope used against them. And I very sincerely, very, very sincerely apologize to you in particular and to all of you for using that. It was not my intention to use a trope. I should have been better. So I hope you understand that. But I have to be better at being aware of those things. My closest Jewish friend in the world, Yoram Hazony, has flown to D.C. this week in part to help me with this, personally and professionally. He does not have to do that. And he may decide after we meet later today, you know, Robert, you're not worth it. And I told him last night, I would understand. But he said, I know Harry.
I'm mentally ill. My Jewish friend's going to come fly into D.C. and fix me. I'm sorry, guys. You fucked up, bro. Never.
People are flying to rectify this one phrase.
Right. So the venomous coalition thing, they still ask him to resign, even following the apology. The resignation demands come in. But if it can't get any worse, this then leaks. I don't know why it leaked or how it leaked, but this is where the thing really explodes. This is Chris. I can't wait.
I also have a question about it, given some of the leaks that occurred yesterday. Right now, the National Task Force to Combat Antisemitism is demanding that Heritage host Shabbat dinners with Heritage interns and junior staff. The faith of many Christians here at Heritage, myself included, would prevent us from attending these dinners in good conscience. As you know, for many Christians, Friday is a special day of prayer and abstinence to commemorate the death of Christ. I assume that no staff will be required to attend the Shabbat dinners, but my concern is that these dinners will be serve as a sort of informal litmus test, and I'm worried that they will hurt many Christians who are not anti-Semitic but don't feel comfortable attending a Shabbat dinner. I would like to know how you guys would respond to that concern and how we can be sure that the dinners won't be used that way when the people requesting them or someone has already been leaking them to the media.
Thanks, Evan. The recommendations, and that was the word, there was no demand was made. That is a gross mischaracterization of what was issued by the co-chairs of the Anti-Semitism Task Force yesterday, of which I am one. And I take some offense to that characterization. This was a recommendation, one of six recommendations that the co-chairs came to in consultation with the task force to try to provide Dr. Roberts with a path forward. As I said, they were recommendations. They came out of the conversation, which we were grateful to have with you on this topic. And one of the offers was if any Heritage staff would like to participate in this kind of a dinner as an educational exercise, not as a betrayal of their faith, that was an open offer from the task force. It was made in generosity of spirit and in the hopes of increased dialogue on this issue. And Evan, I'm deeply sorry that you could not see that as a generous offer, but rather a personal attack on you. It was not.
I'll answer.
Book, did you see his face? They won't even let him answer anymore. You apologize and shut the fuck up. You're done.
They took control of the situation. They took control. Listen, I mean, that young kid, I think, is very much the voice of a lot of the younger generation of conservative Christians who are like, why do I have to go to Shabbat dinner? Maybe they're not like against, maybe they're not even against Israel, but they're like, this is too much now. Like, they're sort of the crowd that's like, okay, Israel's there, but why do we have to give them money? Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to do all this? Like, it's starting to seem like the inverse of the woke culture. Like, you know how you had to do all of that, like Ibram X. Kendi, you know, trying to deconstruct your whiteness and things like that. Now it's trying to deconstruct your Christian conservative anti-Semitism, deicide, you know, we Jews are not responsible. Meanwhile, I have like, you know, Protestant friends who are like, but it says here, the blood be on us and on our children. And, you know, wait, what does that mean? You know, this is crazy, you know. It just seems to me that people are trying too hard to try to force these two traditions to be one. And of course, I believe that if I were to invite young Jews to the Orthodox Church to come and experience the beauty of the Orthodox liturgy, I would be called anti-Semitic. I would be called, you know, like, are you trying to convert us? But wait, why do I have to go to you? You know, if you're not going to come to me, why do I have to go to you? Right? So you see how there's like, I feel like there's like some like professional level gaslighting here.
I mean, look at the email. If we don't come to an agreement, this relationship's irrevocably harmed. You better come to our dinners till we teach you about Judeo-Christian tradition at a Jewish home on Friday. Who, for an Orthodox Christian and for a very devout Catholic, Friday is a day of fasting, penance, reflection on the death of, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Why would they spend it with Jews?
I don't have a problem going to Shabbat, but then they should come to Divine Liturgy because Divine Liturgy is where we eat. Like, okay, yes, they say a prayer and they eat. We say a prayer and we eat the body and blood. Come to liturgy. No problem. You know, I studied religion. I have two masters in religion, right? I'm all about it. I've been to Jewish services. I've been to Muslim services. I've been all over. I've seen it all. Hindu, Buddhist, whatever. My whole thing is that you can't use that as a cudgel to try to sort of dominate one of the groups if you're not willing also to go to the other side. Now, I have seen some of them do that, but I guarantee you for some of the more devout and religious types, you wouldn't see them in a church.
No.
No.
They're not allowed. They're not by us. They're not allowed by themselves to go into churches.
And by the way, this is also very funny because there were some, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood that bordered a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood. And even amongst like people, like they wouldn't come into our spaces because we had pork as well. Like, I'm sorry, it's a Balkan Orthodox, you know, it's like the Greeks, the Serbs, the Albanians who were Orthodox with us, the Bulgarians. I mean, they all had pork and, you know, roasting the pig and, you know, pork souvlaki and pork, you know, gyro. They wouldn't come anywhere near our places because it wasn't kosher. I understand, of course.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it cuts both ways, you know. For somebody, especially very conservative, you know, I think that that's something to throw out there. Clearly, I think this is going to cause even more chaos within these organizations, especially amongst some of the younger, more trad kind of people.
Well, more keeps coming out. So Bethany Mandel, who I don't know if you know this woman, she's a psychopath. Well, she's a convert to Judaism. The Shabbat dinner idea was mine. I did not demand it, Evan. I thought it would be nice. You're welcome to my dinner at my home with my six kids if you prefer. My DMs are open. No. Okay. How about no? Her invitation then leaks. What is this shit? With that in mind, and Charlie Kirk in my heart, I'd like to recommend Heritage hosts some Shabbat dinners with their staff and interns. It's not a forced trip to a Holocaust museum or Auschwitz. It's just an effort to build bridges and make connections between the future of the movement and our community. Okay. All right. Well, then it goes on. Dinner at my home is inherently off the record. Oh, we know, girl, because our phones are off for the Sabbath. I cannot promise you that one of my children will not fart on you. Okay. We hope that we host them almost every week for people in Washington. That's the important part. We host them almost every week for people in Washington. We host them almost every week for people in Washington. Oh. Okay. Now let's look into Beth a little bit. This is back during, what is this, Protective Edge, maybe? I don't remember what Operation Israel's done so many. 2014 June.
Yeah,
I might get banned from for this. Not nuking these fucking animals is the only restraint I expect, and that's because the cloud would hurt Israelis. Okay, so maybe she was having a bad day. It was a long time ago, 11 years, yada, yada. Here's another one. This is anti-Semitic. The person replies, don't make enemies where you have none. Many Christians have shown sympathy toward Israel. It is unwise to call a core tenet of our faith anti-Semitic simply because you find it offensive. We want all people to believe in Christ, so it is not a unique feature we apply to Jews. She says, if you want Jews to stop being Jewish, you are my enemy. This is a convert. Do you think that young Christian men want to have dinner with this person?
I wouldn't want to.
Terrified of her.
I'm gonna nuke the animals. You mean you're gonna nuke Palestinian Muslims, Orthodox Christians, Catholic Christians, evangelicals, Lutherans, atheists, agnostics, whoever, maybe a couple Buddhists in there? You're just gonna nuke them all.
But we can't because it'll hurt the Israelis. When she converted, her blood changed, her DNA changed. Now she's
everything Israeli. Changed. She's part of the chosen. She's part of the chosen people now.
So and I know we went into a little bit deep dive, and it's a little bit salacious and gossipy, but I think this is really indicative of something that's going on under the surface. This is a very large, think tank that's in the forefront of this administration and the GOP and the conservative movement. The Heritage Foundation is a very big think tank, and they've Yeah, and he resigned. At the end of all of that, he resigned. So he not only did they take over, they put him through a humiliation ritual and bullied him into resigning at the end of the day anyway. And now the whole thing is turned on its head.
You know, as this is just why, like we always say, you never have to apologize for something. I don't think he did anything that warranted an apology. I don't think so. Venomous coalition. How can that possibly be bad? I mean, Iran called the embassy den of spies and things like that, but also like the US embassy at the time and the British embassy. I mean, but they all would use this kind of language. Like, I don't know. It's just a common language that people use, you know, especially for different groups, coalitions, you know, countries that are maybe you have an antagonism with, you know, I don't see that word as specifically anti-Semitic. I mean, if he started to use pejorative words, I could understand it, but venomous and he said coalition. He wasn't singling out. It's a coalition means different groups. I'm sure there were Christians in there. There were all sorts of people spewing hate at the Heritage Foundation, at him for, you know, to cancel Tucker, to get rid of anyone connected with that crowd, right? I mean, what's there to... These people, you know what the funny thing is? These people were the ones who were crying and bitching and complaining about cancel culture. But you know they're the most authoritarian when it comes to this.
I know. It's just psychotic. Like, this put the whole thing in perspective is that this all stems from a comment the venomous coalition comment of him just not wanting to cancel Tucker Carlson because he was being, I think he was being like pushed into publicly condemning him, like having the foundation publicly condemn him or something along those lines, or cancel their association with him.
And why, like, what did Tucker do that warrants a cancellation?
Had Nick Fuentes on. Well, it really started back with, I think one of the first was he had the guy from the GHF on there. And he also had, oh, they're really gunning for the guy from Martyr Maid. What's his name? Daryl Moore? Is that his name?
I think so, yeah.
He had done a few episodes with Tucker Carlson. And they really got upset about that. And then he had the guy from GHF, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, Aguilar, oh. Lieutenant Aguilar. Then he had George Papadopoulos's, George Stephanopoulos's sister, the nun.
Yeah, his son, yes.
That was a huge deal. They went crazy over that. And then he had Nick Fuentes on. And they're calling, we've also been through the TPUSA drama where they were talking about, you know, they were trying to bully Charlie into not allowing Tucker come to speak at TPUSA events because he was anti-Semitic.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. So I'm writing an academic article right now for a very prestigious Middle East journal. I was accepted. And I'm writing about like my family's experience with doing pilgrimage to Jerusalem and like how Orthodox Christians do pilgrimage. Never once did anyone in my Orthodox church or my family ever call it Israel. They always referred to it as Palestine because it's in the official patriarch's title. And they always referred to it as the Holy Land, like Ayi Ayi, like it's the Holy Land, like forget Israel, long gone, finished. Temple torn in two, like they're gone, finished, you know, whatever. So I'm going to write this and I have great pictures from like the 1980s and 90s. And like my grandmother had a name tag, which I still have. And I scanned it for it. And it says her name. And then it says, I'm visiting the Holy Land. And the tour guide, the tour company is Zeus Tours, because of course it's a Greek tour company.
Yeah, Greek, yeah.
So, but like just... like they didn't even have they didn't even like do like, you know, I don't know, like Yahweh tours or God tours, no, Zeus tours, because as Greeks, we're not going to give anything to that crew anyway. So it's Zeus tours. I just was thinking about that and I'm writing this article. And as I go through it, I'm also interviewing people in the Jerusalem Patriarchate, including some very prominent bishops. And it's just amazing to think about how Christian Zionism has like taken hold in the West, but in a lot of the Orthodox world, it's just a no-go. Like, sorry, maybe, you know, maybe it's the history and all of that, but it's a no-go. Like in fact, I if my grandmother was still alive, she'd be like, Palestinians? Palestinians are Byzantines anyway. It belongs to us.
Of course, right. Byzantines.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of Roman empires, things here are not going so well. This is like the emperor's new clothes over here. I don't know what's going on. We have a government. We're in the middle of a government shutdown. And Congress is busy passing this thing called the HERE Act, which is to go rescue Jewish pieces of artwork that were stolen by Nazis. That's what they're busy doing. And then of course, nobody's getting a paycheck. So things are starting to fall apart. I've been hearing a lot of stories about the airports. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy did put out a statement.
The controllers got 90% of one payment, 80 to 90% of one payment. They missed the second paycheck. On Thursday, they get an email pay stub that'll show what their next payment is going to be. So this Thursday, they'll get an email that shows that their pay stub is a big fat zero. Many of the controllers said, a lot of us can navigate missing one paycheck. Not everybody, but a lot of us can. None of us can manage missing two paychecks. So if you bring us to a week from today, Democrats, you will see mass chaos. You will see mass flight delays. You'll see mass cancellations. And you may see us close certain parts of the airspace because we just cannot manage it because we don't have the air traffic controllers.
Don't know if you recall, but there was a huge plane crash Don't know if you know anything about air traffic controllers, but they're already the most disgruntled and suicidal occupation on Earth.
Yes. And we saw that UPS crash, of course, you know, that that cargo plane that crashed, which was horrific.
Yeah, it was supposed to be spliced into the video, but I'm not really sure what happened there. But yeah, that horrific crash. So, and that crash, it was terrifying. Like the video is a Spanish speaking guy from Muhammad Ali Airport. Like it's like the most multi-ethnic video you've ever seen. But yeah, it's just things are just not.
Isn't it always like the U.S. think about the past 30, 40 years, air traffic controllers are always like the canary in the coal mine. We had the air traffic controllers go on strike under Reagan. The strike was broken. They were all fired. Then new people were brought in. And every subsequent, I feel like, administration, there's a problem with the air traffic controllers. It feels that way. Always government shut down air traffic controllers. Now we have flight delays, flight cancellations. Oh, my God.
Yeah, our safety international flights are taking international flights are taking priority. And I think there's up to 1,000 cancellations per day at this point in America.
1,000 cancellations?
The other day was in the 800s, yeah.
I thought Trump was bringing back the economy. He just said in the video, it's the best. Everybody's coming in. We're the most powerful. We're the greatest.
We're the hottest. Moving on. Speaking of being hot, I mean, I might do this since someone in the chat is asking me about my weight loss. But instead of doing what he promised to do, RFK announced a plan to roll out low-cost Ozempic. Wow. So we're not going to get rid of dyes or, you know, poisons in our food or help our farmers or make fresh food more affordable. We're going to make Ozempic more affordable. And for those who, this is what happened at the announcement in case you guys didn't get to see.
Creating high-value jobs. But today we... Oh, are you okay? Gordon, you okay? Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break. Yeah.
Took the COVID shot.
That's the Ozempic. The muscle atrophy from Ozempic. Anyway, what is Ozempic? Obviously, it's a semi-glutide originally designated for type 2 diabetes with side effects such as nausea, vomiting, which, I mean, those are good for weight loss, so not the end of the world. Fatigue, potential thyroid tumors, gallbladder issues, and suicidal thoughts with blindness reported in some users.
Yikes.
They're also under hundreds, if not thousands of lawsuits right now. Plaintiffs allege Ozempic caused severe gastrointestinal injuries such as stomach paralysis, bowel obstructions, and intestinal blockages, claims of vision loss, specifically non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, yep, leading to partial or full blindness. There are, as of October 2025, there are thousands of lawsuits filed. But you want to know what? If you can't sell it, give it to the Americans as a discount. At a discount.
Everyone's going to run to it.
Maybe it'll help me lose this last 20 pounds.
I thought we were supposed to, like you were saying before, I thought we were supposed to ban like the fungicides, herbicides, pesticides, all these.
The dyes.
The chemicals. Like.
Processed foods.
Yeah. All of the artificial stuff.
Have you seen people on Ozempic? Have you seen people on Ozempic? They don't look good.
No. Can I be honest? I've lost a lot of weight coming to Russia just by eating the food here. Mm-hmm. The diet here is so much better. And everybody walks a lot.
I lost 7 pounds on our trip to Iraq just from the food and being active.
It was very good, very clean, very healthy. Base ingredients. No, really, they didn't add any fillers. Like in the U.S., you look at the list, it's like, okay, for hummus, it's supposed to be like 5-6 ingredients, chickpeas, tahini, lemon juice, garlic, olive oil. Then in the U.S., it's like this mono something, something, this tri something, something, this duo something, something. And I'm like, wait a second, why? Whoa, what's going on? Why do we need so many things? 5-6 ingredients. Well, that's all we need. And then they're like, no, no, 15-20 ingredients.
We'll have to.
It won't
taste like plastic if we don't. But speaking of food, Trump had good news this week. He said the about Thanksgiving dinner.
What's happening? Grocery prices are way down, and Walmart just announced that the cost of their standard Thanksgiving meal, this is the greatest. They're greatest. They're wonderful. They come out every year with how much does a Thanksgiving meal cost compared to last year, right? And it always goes up, up, up. It's 40%, 30% more. It's 25% lower than 1 year ago. Isn't that great? That's a big deal, Rima. That's a big deal. I don't know if they care about that in Saudi Arabia, but here it means a lot. We got the princess here from Saudi Arabia. She's got a lot of cash. Serious cash, and she's a great person. So she doesn't care about the price of a turkey is down a little bit. You know, she doesn't have to worry about
it. Yeah. Yeah. Glad you guys can afford a Thanksgiving dinner. Princess Rima from Saudi Arabia doesn't have to worry about it. She's got a lot of cash.
And then it just, the shout out to Princess Rima. Meanwhile, like the Kushner is so close to the Saudis and there's always a lot of cash flow in between the two ruling elites of those countries. Very interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of cash. How does he know she got a lot of cash? He's
rolling.
He's helping him with some cash and maybe he's helping her with like a golden visa.
Well, to quote Nick at RBN, you know I'm always cooking in the lab. Well, he said Walmart just announced prices. He also posted about it in case you missed it on video. Well, I went and I found the dinners. I made a little graphic because this is what. So here is your Thanksgiving 2025. First of all, what is this slop? I don't know what your mothers are feeding you at home, but why are we buying cream of mushroom in a can? Okay.
Oh.
Why are we not making pie crust? Why are we buying whatever? Either way, this is your Thanksgiving dinner. It's very lackluster. You get some powdered gravy.
Oh.
Et cetera. So that's 2025 from Walmart. This is 2024 from Walmart. Way bigger. And if you notice, they took away everything fresh out of the old one and just like slopped a bag of carrots.
Oh my God.
So a reporter actually confronts Trump about this.
And since you brought up the Walmart Thanksgiving meal,
yeah.
And it is cheaper, but it also contains less. As a board
of I haven't heard that. You're telling me. Who are you with? Who are you with?
I'm NBC News, sir.
Fake news. NBC. You're fake news. What a NBC's gone down the tubes along with most of the rest of them.
Why do you think there's such a disconnect between the economy that you're describing day to day and the way many Americans say feeling and they're concerned about?
Well, they feel better about our country right now, other than the shutdown, obviously, which is caused by the Democrats, could be ended by the Democrats in 2 minutes. They feel much better. We have more jobs. We just set a record on jobs. You do know that we have more investment in our country.
Fake news. We're back.
Nothing is real.
The food's not real. The politics aren't real. The sex isn't real anymore. Nothing's real in America.
Nothing's real?
Nothing's real.
Wait, we're not done, dude. He also, he, this is the thing. He gives you these things. He acts like they're a present. He also announced a 50-year mortgage. A 50-year mortgage. So this post went up. Oh, sorry, wrong post. Sorry, guys. No, wrong post. This one. Here we go. What? Okay, so he posts this. They had been talking that they were toying with the idea of 50-year mortgages. They announced now that they are official, comparing himself to FDR, 30-year mortgage during the Great Depression. I guess we're getting the 50-year mortgage during the best depression, the greatest depression.
So wait a second. So we went from a 30-year mortgage to a 50-year mortgage, and somehow this is seen as an advancement in our species. This is seen as an advancement in the economy, and somehow being 20 more years in debt is something to be jubilant about? I'm supposed to be happy? I'm supposed to clap like a seal? Like, what is this? 50 years. 50 years.
Years.
And by the way, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Since American life expectancy continues to decline because of our shitty food and shitty water and everything shitty in the U.S., can I ask, so when you die at year 49, what happens to the house and the property you invested in?
You give it to your kids.
I know, but now they're saddled with the debt. You see how this goes? Now 49, they're older and they got their own 50-year mortgage, and now they got to take on the other mortgage as well.
Right, but don't forget, our median age of home ownership has now risen to 40. So with the median age of home ownership and a $50 loan, we pay off our homes at 90?
90. While we're in the nursing home paying $6,000 to $10,000 a month.
A month.
A month. You see, you, I don't know.
So just so you know, FDR's mortgage was during a time to create home ownership. Go read The Jungle by Upton Sinclair if you want to know anything about what home ownership was like back then. You like literally ordered it out of a Macy's catalog and like hoped for the best. Okay, so actually what this really is a bailout of the real estate market.
Yep.
Obviously, home prices have doubled in a generation while wages have not. So instead of addressing housing inflation, Trump is going to extend the leash. So don't worry. The American dream isn't gone. It has a payment plan. So I took the median home price, which is quarter two, 2025, was $410,800. Interest rates right now are 7%, which is quite high.
It's high. But
7%. So at a 30-year loan with a 7% annual interest rate, your monthly payment is around $2,700. Total paid over life is $982,000 for a 30-year mortgage. For a 50-year mortgage, your payment only drops by $500 or $600 down to $2,150. Total paid over time, $1,288,000. So interest over a 30-year loan is $571,000. Interest paid over a 50-year loan is $877,000.
You are buying a house valued at okay, it appreciates over time. I get it. $410,000, say within 30 years, even if it goes up to even say double, you're still paying so much more for all this time and that capital. If we just think about the flow of capital in the US economy, I mean, yes, of course, you know, home, the whole point of having a 15-year more, a 10-year or 15-year mortgage or a 20-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage was that at some point you could take that equity and you could do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could begin to use that as a driver because the United States economy is based off of that model.
Right.
So of course, you could use that equity and then, you know, basically take it out against that your value of your house or the equity that you have in the house and then maybe buy another house or buy an income property or do renovations or do something important or maybe pay for the medical bills that are through the roof that people can't afford. In any case, this creates a long-term issue as well for equity, for liquidity. There's so many things that are involved here, just in terms of the domestic, you know, household economy. I can see that this is not going to be very beneficial to a lot of people. It's going to harm more people. It's going to be very beneficial to banks, mm-hmm. mortgage lenders, and to landlords.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be beneficial to homeowners, especially first-time buyers and those in the low middle class and below. Not going to be good.
Not going to be good. Also, he announced this, which was interesting. A dividend, talking yada, yada, yada about the tariffs. Most important part is a dividend of at least $2,000 per person, not including high-income people, will be paid to everyone. Okay, I don't want another stimulus check that you're going to tax me on the next year. Just keep it. Yeah. What is $2,000 supposed to do? Nobody's putting that back into the economy, right? Well, maybe for the holidays.
You know what he's doing? He's doing a COVID thing. Remember, mm-hmm. he gave those checks out?
Passing the buck. Yeah, you're just passing the buck. It's a wealth transfer.
It becomes a wealth transfer again. We're going back for that as well.
Yeah, no more wealth transfers. It's stupid. So he announces this $2,000 check, and then Scott Bissett, I guess he didn't let Scott Bissett know that he was announcing this.
Yeah.
You know, it could The $2,000 dividend could come in lots of forms and lots of ways, George. It could be just the tax decreases that we are seeing on the president's agenda. You know, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, deductibility of auto loans. So, you know, those are substantial deductions that, you know, are being financed in the tax bill.
Secretary.
But Trump said, we're getting $2,000 per person. Scott Bessent's telling us it's actually tax breaks. You guys got to go find. Good luck.
Good luck. Go find it. Hope you find the loopholes.
So bad. We found them all. Good luck to you. Anyway. Exactly. No, crazy. Your crazy. Speed. It just keeps getting bleaker. Let's just check in with the Department of War.
We're not just buying something. We're solving life and death problems for our warfighters. We're not building for peacetime. We are pivoting the Pentagon and our industrial base to a wartime footing. Building for victory should our adversaries FAFO.
We're back with the FAFO again. This guy lives on social media.
We're full mask off now. We're going from normal ops to a wartime footing at the Pentagon.
Wartime footing. Wartime
told you footing. Guys last episode, no new wars to some new wars to all the new wars to wartime footing. You're getting a wartime economy with austerity and they're not even letting you know.
I know. Oh my God. I know. Usually it's supposed to be beneficial historically to working people. Not in this economy. Not in this economy.
Nope.
You know, I was on Soloviev Live tonight and that clip's going to come out. It was great. But I spoke and I said, look, Trump was elected by the American people, and therefore they have the voters that he is accountable to. But actually, he was funded by what are not his voters, but his shareholders. So Trump is a hybrid. He's both on one side, a Democratically elected politician. On the other side, he's basically a corporate entity. And he's got shareholders, and those shareholders, they demand dividends. And those dividends come from war, expansion, plundering. So, and that's why we haven't seen an end to Russia, Ukraine. You know, we got to end this war. I've ended all these wars. Yeah, but you need this war to continue because people are making a lot of money off of it. And number two, you need to add some new wars. So we can also get rid of the old stockpile of weapons and we can build some new ones too. And maybe a couple jets go down and we're going to buy new ones. A couple boats go down and we're going to get a couple others. That's how this economy functions. And they agreed. They said, of course, that's why we're still here. The U.S. is arming Ukraine. Of course, with the government shutdown, some of those arms transfers have not been so convenient and aren't really happening as well, which means that they're going to lose more territory, and then Ukraine's going to demand more, and the Europeans are going to go crazy and give their stockpiles, and they're going to get asked for more and buy more, and it's just welcome to the cycle.
Well, see, that's enough blackpilling for now. I don't know if this is a blackpill or not. I guess it depends on how you look at it, but guess who's in town?
Did Jelani practice basketball maybe with U.S. Special Forces in Idlib?
In Idlib or in Buka.
maybe.
Not Buka. What if I look for Abu Ghraib? What was the camp that he was in? The other one? I don't remember the other one.
I forgot the name. Yeah, in Iraq, you mean?
When he was in Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how many takes they had to do to get the ones that went in.
I mean, imagine as a United States, well, you were a member of the Army. I was never Army. I was Navy. But could you imagine playing shooting hoops with Al-Nusra Front?
No.
What are we doing here?
No. I mean, I couldn't, but I'm sure the guys over there could because they were cooperating. They were working together, you know? It's all.
Somebody says it was AI. It probably was AI.
It could have been. Who knows? Who knows? The problem is that once again, we have a former terrorist, quote unquote, with a bounty on his head coming.
No, they removed it. The UN.
He's off the terrorist list. He's off the terrorist list. So the US removed it. And then the UN lifted sanctions for him to come.
Wait, let me play it.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Fox.
Will you discuss the Abraham Accords when you meet with the president of Syria?
Well, we're going to meet, and I think he's doing a very good job. It's a tough neighborhood, and he's a tough guy, but I got along with him very well, and a lot of progress has been made with Syria. That's a tough one, but a lot of progress has been made. You know, we took the sanctions off at the request of Turkey, at the request of actually Israel, at the request of a few different countries, and we took the sanctions off to give them a chance.
Was it Turkey or was it Israel?
Or was it both?
I can understand Turkey asking for the sanctions to be lifted.
For sure, because they need some compensation for all the...
Do you believe that Israel really asked for the sanctions to be lifted, or is he just trying to give them credit?
Who knows? Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if Israel also wanted that because they have a financial gain there too.
Yeah, big time.
But they get their foothold in there. I mean, think about it this way. Okay, here we go. It's that hour.
I don't have a hood.
Conspiracy. Yes! Yes, I see it.
Oh, I got my Lavrov shirt.
Let's go. Bring it back. I'm putting on the conspiracy hood, which could also double as like, I don't know, like I'm some druid. Like, you know, oh my God. There.
My head's too
there big. We are. Listen, this is DD Geopolitics Conspiracy Minute. Think about it this way. Sanctions relief. Israelis go to Syria, start buying up property, start buying up farms, start investing in industry, start investing in a petroleum industry, start investing in agriculture, start investing and doing mercantile work and logistics and all that, you know, import, export, and then start having a dominant place in Syrian life, Syrian society, and you can achieve a greater Israel in other ways than just military conquest.
Just like America does imperialism in other ways instead of just colonizing. Neo-colonialism. So
that's my conspiracy hoodie moment today.
My Gibby hat moment, I guess. But I will say this, that this is my Gibby Motorola hat. But I will, you know, and guess who was in hanging out with the Druze? Laura Loomer.
Laura Loomer was hanging out with the Druze.
We went to Syria and hung out with the Druze at the borders. So there's a lot of things happening, you guys. We mentioned this America First MAGA divide. It's international. These people are making moves. So yeah, and also Jolani's still in town. He meets with Trump tomorrow. So we'll obviously update you guys on that on Wednesday. But here's an update from Syria. Shia opened up a place of worship for some sort of community center. And so HTS-backed Sunnis are now going. Yes. And that's ongoing as we speak. There were gunshots right before we started streaming in the Shia neighborhoods of Damascus. As far as I know, nobody's been hurt yet. But the reports are still murky, but this is ongoing. I also want to err on the side of caution. It could be authentic. It could be somebody trying to stoke something because Jolani's in America. So kind of keep your head on a swivel that way. Either way, Shias are still being attacked and they're still getting hurt. So
listen, the Syria chapter isn't closed yet. In fact, it's just opening up. And I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot more sectarian violence and division within Syria in the coming months, especially around the Shia community, of course, the Druze, the Christians. But keep your eye on the northeast because the timetable is running out that Turkey gave to the Kurds. And I have a feeling that we're going to see renewed fighting once again.
And you did mention it earlier, and we're getting at the end of our episode, but Turkey, they issued arrest warrants. Now,
yes.
The interesting thing is that, so prior to this, Israel said, we're not going to let Turkey come in. Turkey wanted to have boots on the ground in Gaza and maybe even in the West Bank. I think they came to a compromise and said, okay, Azerbaijan will come. Basically the same thing. They're just baby Turkey. So Azerbaijan and Indonesia are going to take care of that. That has been the thing. Thank you so much for that, Stoshik. Now I lost my train of thought. Bring me back. Help me.
So Indonesia and Azerbaijan. Right.
So then Turkey issues an arrest warrant. They issued an arrest warrant for Bibi, right? And a bunch of others. Other IDF officials and government officials. And then today, Israel announced once again, there will never be Turkish boots in Israel or Palestine, past, present, future, never again, ever.
Well, you see, this is very funny because as I was saying with the conspiratorial hood, the Zionists probably think that Turkey is going to do the same sort of conspiratorial move by trying to do their neo-Ottoman thing. Like, oh, Turkish troops are here. And if something were to happen, Turkey could invoke that famous article, and it's a NATO country, and try to stoke some tensions from within, sort of fifth column it in that way. I don't know, but there's a lot of interesting, intrigue in all of this and all these power plays.
And now instead of a Turkish-backed Idlib, we have a Saudi Qatar-backed Idlib that's there just in case. We have a breakaway faction that said Jolani's not hardline enough. This always happens when a military coup or something along those lines takes over. There's always a faction that says you got too soft or you didn't carry the revolution all the way through, and they break off. Well, we already have that. So we have all of these Turkmen and Uyghurs and whatever, the Chechens up in Idlib again. They're being funded by Saudi and Qatar because Turkey's obviously not interested in that anymore. So another mess brewing on our hands in Syria, and eyes on Lebanon as the new...
Well, eyes on Lebanon. All eyes on Lebanon, yeah. Because it's about to get hot again. Like, really, I think.
So we will let you guys go, but we will see you on Wednesday. Woo! After Chris travels. Guys, go to the Instagram and subscribe. We're putting all of our wonderful clips up there. Make sure you guys follow Chris because he puts his travel stuff on Instagram as well as on Twitter. But other than that, I think that's it for us. And we will see you guys from a brand new location on Wednesday.
We'll see you all. Take care. Be safe.
Be safe. Get your Thanksgiving dinners.